it is critical that as a profession, we spread the awareness of the profession. Then there's exposure, and thirdly, there's the opportunity. And that's how we make this profession even better.
You're listening to You're a Financial Planner, Now What? The podcast to help you fast-track your career by bringing you meaningful conversations on topics that influence new financial planners, their careers, the lives of their clients.
Today, I'm so excited to share with you Alexandria Davis's conversation with Trudy Turner. Trudy is a senior wealth manager at United Capital, where she can be found teaching, mentoring, and counseling students, young practitioners, and career changers to accelerate their success in the financial planning profession. She brings over a decade of financial services experiences in wealth management, tax planning, insurance underwriting, and public accounting. Up next, you'll hear Trudy's passion for financial planning, how she switched career paths and found her dream job within the profession, and the power behind a great mantra. Trudy and Alex talk about larger issues as well, like diversity and inclusion, and what we can do to help lead a change, starting with ourselves.
When you think about the work of financial planners, do you think of words like passion, purpose, and impact? If not, then something just isn't right. I'm Kate Healy, Managing Director of Generation Next at TD Ameritrade, and we believe that empowering people to live their best lives is a noble calling. The independent RIAs who work with us use their passion to help transform client lives, communities, and their own futures. Want to learn more about how we can support you in helping your clients reach their financial goals? Find out more at tdainstitutional.com.
So hello, Trudy. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. It's good to see you after FPA annual conference 2019. Good to talk to you.
Exactly. It was pretty perfect that we got to meet there and then go, oh, great, let's do the podcast in like a week or two. So I was just like too excited to happen because I hadn't actually met you in person yet.
That is correct. That is correct.
Well, again, like I said, thanks again for joining the podcast. And you truly are a gem of the financial planning profession. And I just can't wait for listeners to be able to hear from your wisdom and your insight.
Perfect.
For today's podcast, I really want listeners to get a very high-level overview of what you see as the future of the profession. But also, I want them to kind of leave with some smaller details maybe on how they can take and be a part of that impact. But before we really dive into all that, I want listeners to just get to know you a little bit better. So can you share with us how the landscape was when you joined the profession and industry and when you first started and what your first job was into the profession?
I started the profession at a very interesting time. I specifically say interesting because it was just before the burst of the tech bubble. So I started in 2000 and it was right after tax season because being a career changer, that'd be the first thing I'd say about myself, is that I have a background in finance and I got a master's in accounting. And I was in the public accounting world as a senior tax consultant. And I put in my notice on October 15th or October 16th, the day after all the taxes were due for the end of the year. And then I went straight into wealth management. But it was really interesting time for me to start there because everything that I knew about finance and being a CPA and the world of accounting and business was that the tech bubble, we didn't call it that yet, was going to burst because it just didn't make any sense to me how we were having such a high stock market with companies that didn't make any money. And, I'm pleased to say that I'm not pleased to say that there was a bubble, but I am pleased to say that some of the bedrock studies that I had in school about, you know, how the market is supposed to work actually finally got realized with the market, you know, having the bubble and going back to maybe a little bit saner territory. Now, one reason why I even mentioned that is looking back, that was absolutely one of the best things, best times to actually come into the business. I can say that 19 years later now, because if you go into turmoil and drama and you come out stronger, then as a practitioner, that's only a good thing. So for those of you who might have started in times that you thought, this is a really bad time to be in financial planning, it's actually one of the best learning lessons that you could have.
I don't even know what to say first, because that was like such a big point right there. But so before I get to that part, because I do want to impact that a little bit, one thing that you pointed out is that you mentioned you were a career changer.
Right.
And I don't want to gloss over that, because there are several next gen that are joining the profession that are career changers. But what's really unique about you is that oftentimes career changers are coming from like tech space, education. But you are actually a professional that maybe worked with finance in conjunction, being from the accounting space. So how did you transition, or how did you know you wanted to transition into wealth management? I know you quit the day after all the returns extensions were done, but how was that transition?
Well, I'll actually tell you, I didn't know. I didn't know in advance. What I would say is, if at first you don't succeed, keep trying, right? So what happened is in school, I went in as an engineering major. Good math and science, surely you're going to be an engineer. What I found in school is I did great grade-wise, but I had no idea what I wanted to do with an engineering degree, and I didn't like the fact that I was going to be far removed, at least I thought so, from people. So even in school, started as an engineer, but retreated personally when I wasn't studying to business and people and finding myself reading. I mean, I've been a business and entrepreneurial magazine reader since I was 16 years old. And I just decided one day, I said, surely they have a major for this. And that's when I went into the business school. And so I started as a finance major, but I was a finance major who always knew that they wanted to be a CPA, because CPAs speak the language of business. Now, when I went to school, you didn't want to be a CPA and a finance major, or accounting major and a finance major. The two did not meet. And so I was a finance major, and then in my master's studies, I went to be an accounting major. Nowadays, it's not uncommon for people to be dual majored in both, but way back in the day, it was like you were one or the other. you did not do both. So maybe the kind of the lesson of what I'm saying is that I didn't know what I wanted to start with. So I started with what I thought I did well, engineering, and then it morphed into finance. Then I knew I wanted it to be accounting. And even then, I didn't know about wealth management. I didn't know about financial planning, but I did know what I didn't want to do. And I didn't want to go to Wall Street. I didn't want to cold call. I didn't want to see what I saw as little as I knew about what advisors were who worked on the street. And so I kept tweaking my career until I found what I knew I didn't want to do, until I found what I did want to do. And that is when in Dallas, the Institute of Certified Financial Planners had its national, the ICFP had its national conference in Dallas. I was still a tax accountant. And I said, you know, this looks pretty interesting. I went to that conference and I was immediately like, this is exactly what I want to do. And from that point, you couldn't stop me. I basically met Cheryl Garrett at that conference. I asked her what I should do. I put myself in the CFP programs that I found out about. I went to residency after finding out about it, CFP residency. I just did everything that I could at that point, because it was like, I didn't know it existed, but now that I know it existed, I'm going to do everything possible to go in that direction.
So it really sounds like people should really take notice. We may hear this a lot, but it's really good to get these reminders about, like, it's just as important to know what you don't like as it is to know what you do like, in order to shape and kind of help guide you on the path of figuring out what it is you want to do. And it just happens to be that way also in the financial planning profession. It sounds like that's exactly what was happening to you, or what basically guided you all the way to being a wealth manager, even when as far back as where you think about where you started as, oh, an engineer possibly, you know, and how you ended up all the way here. It was a whole lot of don't like this, I'm not a fan of that. And then it got you there. And that's amazing that, you know, you're able to self-assess that way. And oftentimes as next gen, we have to keep reminding ourselves to continue to do that, that that's a part of the process. But there's also one thing that you touched on too in the beginning when you were kind of just sharing with us the landscape. But the best time, or one of the times to start in the profession, and it's really from a learning aspect. And I wanted to hear a little bit more about this because I thought it was such a a gem that you shared about people who maybe have started during the time when it was a down market, or it didn't look like financial planning or wealth management or just finance was an ideal place to be involved in. And could you just share a little bit more about that?
Well, yeah, sure. Definitely. I think, not to give away my age, but I actually was in college when Black Friday 1987 hit. And it was very interesting to me to actually have seen what happened. That was, you know, a very incredibly sharp one day for the most part event. And it was interesting for me to watch people's reactions and how basically my college peers reacted to that. But it was something that was so quick and fleeting. It was interesting to me. So when I'm sitting here as a tax consultant and I'm getting ready to become a financial planner, and all my teaching is telling me that something bad's probably going to happen, and if it doesn't, that's great because the market's gone up. I didn't really fear it. If there was anything I would say about me being maybe a little bit naive about going into the profession at that time, it wouldn't have been good if I hadn't really vetted who I went to work for, because if they weren't properly set up, they didn't understand how the market works, they weren't ready to deal with the decrease in revenue that would ultimately hit with a correction in the market, then that could have been a really bad answer. So because I had vetted who I decided to work for very well, they were very in tune to the fact that, matter of fact, they gave me several mantras that I learned when I went into the market. And one of the first mantras that they taught me was, if your revenue is based on assets under management, you will be overpaid when the market is good, and you will be underpaid when the market is bad. And that is very true, because it's not a matter that the payment stream comes from how the assets are doing. It's not a matter of how hard you're working. So they understood that. And that is one of the lessons I learned from them very early in the beginning. And I have made sure to think about that along my career along the way. Maybe just another quick golden nugget that they gave me was that they said, be mindful that if you choose to work in an hourly basis, be mindful of the fact that if you don't consider your own expertise, you can overcharge for your ignorance and undercharge for your expertise. And I also found that pretty profound, and it's been something that I make sure to be mindful of. If you're an expert in something and you know it really well, someone paying you potentially by the hour isn't a good reflection of all of that time and expertise that you've grown to accumulate, how hard you worked, how much you know. But on the other side of it, if you're ignorant to something and you have to spend a lot of time to find the answer, you're overcharging a client for your ignorance. And those are a couple of the gems that this firm just gave to me at that time.
Now, I know I would be listening to this and going like, well, she gave us two. I just have to know what the other two. Because I'm over here writing, you know, ferociously down on a piece of paper. And I understand the place, but I just want this to really be a vessel for information for people, because just those two mantras are like huge, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm at work or I'm listening in the car as I drive to my firm. And I'm like, man, maybe that's something I'm dealing with, or maybe that's something the firm's dealing with. And so I don't know if the other two are short and quick, but like, I'd love to hear the other two if you'd like to share.
I'm not sure I had two others. I'm sure, but I have others. I have others. They'll probably come up. You know what? I do have others. They'll come up along the way.
Okay.
I will come back to what you said before. I really do believe in listening to yourself, in the sense of when you're curating your career, oftentimes, and I guess this is kind of a mantra that I tend to tell the many people that I either mentor or sponsor, or they ask me for advice. I said, you know, oftentimes knowing what you don't want to do can be much more important than knowing what you do want to do. You know, in my case, I knew I didn't want to be what I saw Wall Street was all about. And that led me to always be looking more for what ultimately I found to be financial planning.
Now that you're a wealth manager currently, what about financial planning profession excites you or makes you go, those are the do's, you know, that's what I do? What are some of those things that you do realize about yourself?
I think it's for a pretty consistent profession that most of us have a high emotional quotient to want to help people, a high quotient of being very comfortable and familiar with numbers and analysis and money, have a high emotional quotient or understanding of how money is a tool in this world to achieve goals, dreams, things that you want in life. So those are a lot of the things that I'd say a lot of people get into the profession because they understand and they know that about themselves. But I would also say that, and you hear this a lot in like work with on money scripts and understanding things about ourselves, there's probably at some level, there's some ways that you grew up or you were influenced or your parents influenced you or you saw an event in a family life or you just observed. There's probably something that influenced you to think, if I were able to help or assist or change that for other people, I would want to do it. I don't have any crazy money script in the sense of, you know, I didn't have a family member die and their affairs were out of order. I had something as simple as my parents were awesome in that they felt education was so important for us, that in particular for them, that they are, you know, first generation college African-American graduates, and that for us, meaning my brother and I, education was so important as an opportunity for us to, you know, live a better life than they did. But as a result of their sacrifice to make sure that we had education, a lot of the other things that we might have wanted to do as a family was always, well, someday we'll do that. Well, someday we'll do that. Well, someday we'll do that. And I think a little bit of that has probably was maybe the money script that I heard that I was like, well, you know what? Someday is not promised. I don't want that to be my mantra. Someday I'll do that. And financial planning for me has a lot to do with that. When people tell me they have dreams and goals, I am one of the first that I'll point out, you can do that now. This doesn't have to be someday.
I really like that concept of like do that now versus someday, because even the role that I play, let's say in a financial planning firm as supporting the planners, sometimes you hear the discussion with clients, and oftentimes we're planning for something that will come in the future, you know, retirement, this goal, you know, years from now.
Right.
And maybe we don't have enough discussion around, well, could that happen right now? And that could be just due to some of our own biases. If we didn't accomplish or didn't do it, like how your parents had to overcome it or that sacrifice, then like, well, how would we see that that's possible now? And being the planner in that space, or whoever's listening being the planner in that space, that could be a very difficult line to constantly be at with a client, of making sure that you're also helping them see that within themselves, if that makes sense.
I have very strong feelings about and feel so blessed to have taken some clients who thought they could not achieve certain things and to have worked with them and shown them how they actually could achieve them, right? So maybe it was they wanted to put a child through college and they didn't think they had the means. Maybe it was because they wanted to retire a little bit earlier and they didn't think they had the means. I've had great experiences in this career to be able to help people do that. But I will also share with you, I've had, and I still have, great sense of failure for some of the clients that I tried to help them realize that they could do things right now, and they chose not to do that. For example, I had a client, they're at a former firm, so they're no longer my client, but it was an executive woman who was working after divorce. She was financially set in terms of what she said she wanted and needed from a financial standpoint, but she always says, well, I'll travel when I retire. Well, she was over 65, so she was continuing to work, you know, past what most people kind of consider, I'm going to retire by 65. She was approaching 70s. I bet you she's still working, but she didn't travel. And I didn't understand why. I was never really able to figure that out. But she had the means to travel, but she always says, when I retire, but she wasn't willing to retire. I mean, I sent this woman travel magazines on a regular basis to her house to say, you can go here, you can go there. Tomorrow's not promised. Why don't we try a little trip? And so, you know, it's not always a money issue. I also had another client who had more than enough money to purchase a second home, a vacation home, which was absolutely the desire of his wife. But he couldn't pull the trigger on actually purchasing the home, even though every indication was that it was very much within their financial reach. But the caveat here was that his wife was a second-time cancer survivor, and this was her main dream. Vacation home, bring the family together. I don't know how long I'll be on this earth. But his money scripts were so strong that he couldn't spend money at that level, even though he'd been reassured that they could afford it, because of family tragedies, you know, probably the money scripts of the Great Depression and things like that. So sometimes it's really difficult, even when everything indicates you can do something, that we may not be able to get or help clients actually achieve what they say they would, what they even say to us are their goals.
I really like how you basically not only like shared with us, but also the examples, because sometimes it can be very hard to see what it is that some of the things that are said on the podcast. And like, just me now, I'm like, wow, that's real, you know, and you being willing enough to share the wins of being a planner and some of the losses, like, and not just like a loss, like you lost a client, but like if the client said no, or the client never actually got to that point of hitting that goal they said they wanted it, because that does happen, you know? And I just really like that you shared that. It was really authentic to me. And then also, just to kind of transition us, but keeping that same authenticity in our discussion when it comes to how we see the future for our profession, because it's like that work that we do with clients, how do we continue that? You know, how do we keep that balance of making sure we're still doing what's needed and wanted, and then also what it is we see the future even coming out to be. So I know this year we celebrated 50 years as a profession, but for you, Trudy, what is it that you see the profession going in the future?
Well, I have the privilege of raising an 8-year-old. And so when you look at the differences or the environment or the way that he's growing up versus the way that I'm growing up, it's very, you know, the way that I grew up, it's very humbling to see someone who's so much more of a digital native, someone who you could see, because of the way technology interacts in the world right now, that without some nurturing could go to have much less ability to relate to people. And I think that's important when we talk about financial planning, because in a time where you have ever more information about what we do just publicly available, that doesn't make it accessible for everyone. So I have no doubts the human element is critical to the profession. The complexity of something that really honestly used to be very simple. Retirement wasn't hard way back in the day. It was get a job at a good company, stay there 25 years, yeah, and they take care of you, right? That is not the recipe for success today. So, you know, the whole concept of being financially responsible and how you do that and how you cultivate your career and how you save money and how you achieve your goals is just, it's not easy anymore. And so many of the pieces of doing that require human discipline, right? And that's why I think that our profession is not going to go away anytime soon, at least the human element. That being said, it is changing a lot. There's so many more expectations as far as how we interact with people, not just meetings, not just virtually, how often, in what ways, and the types of services and things that we provide to those clients. And quite frankly, that we have to be better technicians, that is getting to be very complicated, even for our, you know, mass affluent or regular citizens. And it's becoming very complicated, even if people do everything that, at least in my generation, they said you should do, that that doesn't necessarily mean financial success in this world anymore. You know, the typical graduate from school, go to college, get a good job. Sometimes, even today, those things are not even close to the recipe for success to be financially stable in the United States. So there's a lot that we can help people with in even some of the most basics, but even to the most difficult things like starting a business or executing stock options or, you know, whatever you want to insert in there.
I want to dissect this a bit because obviously the future of the profession is a conversation that is being had just about everywhere.
Yes.
Two of the things that stuck out to me when you were sharing was the level and the amount of information, and then also the human element.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we could tackle this a little bit of in the space of information. I just think of like, we all walk around with a phone in our hand that you can literally Google a question you have about something and there's information on it. But then there's the level that you also talked about of how things are just becoming more complex and more complex, where it's like you can't just ask a simple question into, you know, Google and it just spit out that answer because there's so many other layers to the complexity that you had to have asked to actually get the question right. Can you maybe share a little bit of how just the amount of information and how you see the future of the profession is either benefiting or is it a con, like how that looks like to you?
Here's a just had a meeting last week situation. Newer client, been quiet for about a year, came in, said they've just retired in the retirement phase, and so lower income, and just came in all on fire about how, hey, I'm going to start Social Security, and I've done a lot of research, and I've looked at this, and I want to figure out how exactly we could, you know, not pay taxes on our Social Security, use our taxable money so that we can keep our income low, and just was very proud of themselves for the research that they'd done and everything that they had put forward. And I listened. And when they were done and they said, what do you think about that? I said, well, I can actually tell you that that's a great plan if your goal is essentially the right now to pay no tax. But what I don't want you to do is to be, I always get this messed up, penny wise and pound foolish, because the level of information was out there for them to grasp how I could today pay no taxes. Well, what they didn't understand about their financial situation or why they're engaging an advisor is to let them know that today we pay no tax, but when we both come into RMDs, we hit this wall and we are paying so much tax that that 1 year of benefit completely unravels when the government tells us how much we have to pay out in RMDs. And so I explained to him how Roth conversions now for them make so much sense because, well, we're in somewhat historic rates of lower taxes and they're going to hit RMDs at 70.5. Maybe if they're lucky with the Secure Act, it'll be 72, but nonetheless, they're going to hit them. And that what they really needed to consider was paying the devil that they know, which is taxes right now, to over their life, their remaining lifetimes, to have a benefit. So that speaks exactly to the 2 points that you talked about. Level of information is out there, but that doesn't mean they know how to apply it. And then just the human element of someone being able to talk to them and say, I understand what you're saying. I totally get it. However, let me give you another option. That's what's not going to be available by typing the question in, right? They don't know how to ask that question. I don't even know if they know how to ask that question.
Yeah. Yeah, because the internet, you have to know what to ask. they're not going to get that suggested drop down. Isn't going to ask you about the RMD that you just asked them about.
And even if it does, is it going to have enough discernment to understand this is the type of client that it's okay to say to this client, hey, I can let you be penny wise and pound foolish? Because, you know, that mantra right there might work with one client and totally make another client very uncomfortable or mad that you said that. So again, it's the human element is so critical, because ultimately we can make all of the recommendations we want all day long, but if we don't find a way to connect with the client for them to understand it, appreciate and implement it, then we're not worth the money that we're being paid.
This was another thing that kind of popped up in discussion at the FPA annual conference with some of the students, actually. I was really just amazed with the conversations I was having with students. It definitely didn't make me feel like, oh, they're someone that hasn't quite had even their first job. That wasn't the experience at all. It was like I was just talking to a regular peer, which was amazing. But one of the things that I was noticing is a lot of the students were maybe sharing how they wanted to help serve communities or people that aren't naturally the niche or the focus within some of the firms today. And so maybe you could talk about how you see the future of the profession helping more of the masses and more of, as you said, like a regular citizen. and what do you see about that, and how do maybe you currently work with clients that maybe fit that mold?
Yeah, so I will tell you what I have done in my career. I applaud and I support very heavily continued thinking in this area. I think it is key to what some people still very much believe is the recognition of whether financial planning and wealth management is actually a profession has to do with whether they serve every man, not just the wealthy man or woman.
So what I'm really looking forward to is the next generation, the students that are upcoming, the younger professionals that are coming in, really thinking outside the box on how we can work with and, as a profession, serve the masses. I know that I have struggled with that myself personally, and I have many thoughts in that direction. But until there's like more massive change in that direction, I'm hopeful that they understand that there are things that are being done. We do have like the Foundation for Financial Planning that they can support, whether they support it monetarily or whether they support it on a volunteer basis. We do have other organizations that are working within the community. A great example would be like Quad A, the Association of African American Financial Advisors, who are working. There's a very much of an interest to work in the communities. There's Financial Planning Day. I mean, there's so many ways that you can do this, even if you're not necessarily doing it in your own firm. But if I could inspire for a moment a generation to disrupt our profession in this sense, I would truly love that to be one of the next phases of the evolution of the profession. I'll give you an example. Another one, again, is that I sent to some colleagues today a fintech conference that's happening in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, the capital of Ethiopia. And it's a fintech conference. And, you know, Ethiopia's going to have a very different mix of helping the masses than the United States has, right? But if you could actually see different types of things that are being done in other emerging countries, we get a better idea of how we can solve a lot of the problems or the issues that we believe we're having here in this country. And I find that very exciting to think that we could learn from what other countries and areas and where they're solving the problem and how we can bring some of those solutions back to the United States.
So I just want to touch on this because we are obviously on a podcast that's financial planning association heavy. And you just touched on basically the concept of attending a conference that is obviously still involved in the financial planning space, but coming from a company or from a country that is maybe doing it differently and learning from them. And you also could basically told the NextGen community, like, that's the call to action, is to disrupt the norms of where we're going as a profession. And attending those type of conferences is a way to do that. Now, obviously, if you can't go all the way to Ethiopia, we got to find another way. But because I immediately started to go, ooh, let me Google this and see what's going on. but also to your point of like disrupting that call to action you've given us.
Yes.
As the NextGen.
Yes.
What other ways can we be doing that? Because that was a great example right there, is attending a conference, something like that, that's going to pique your interest and expose you to other ways besides maybe the way we currently are only seeing it.
Yes. And my example gives you a huge nod or understanding of how I personally learn and how I think. But one of the ways that I chose to build my career, and one of the ways that I've chosen to just be a lifelong learner, is that I truly kind of despise groupthink. I think groupthink is dangerous. And as a result of what I personally feel of how groupthink is dangerous, I very much challenge myself to read and to research and to challenge my own thoughts of what I think is norm or acceptable. So personally, I go to conferences that get me uncomfortable and get me to think differently. As far as my own evolution for financial planning, I attend Financial Planning Association. I attend Investments and Wealth Institute conferences. I have attended vendor conferences for, say, like StockOpter. I am a CPA, so I attend CPA conferences. I choose to feed myself a very diverse diet of ideas and ways that I can think about issues and problems. And I think if you're going to be a disruptor, you need to think differently. You need to be exposed. You need to challenge yourself, and you need to unabashedly not be afraid to listen to divergent ideas on the same problem. And that's how I choose to do it. If you're a friend of mine, you know I call myself a self-prescribed magazine-aholic. I mean, literally, you can find me in an airplane reading anything from Forbes, Fortune, Money Magazine, Kiplinger. Okay, you expect those. But then I'll read Psychology Today, or I'll read I'll read Vogue magazine. I'll read Cycle World, which is about motorcycles. I'll read anything that's interesting. I read Wired because it's very focused on technology and forward thinking. Conscious Company because it's about more like the ESG focus. I will put things in my mind, and the connections and the creativity and the ideas will come later. But just expose yourself to so many different things so that you're not succumbing to groupthink or the same solution for the same problem over and over again.
There's two things I want to just share. The one thing, when you were sharing about the magazines part, it made me think of like on planes, how they have that magazine in that back pocket of the chair.
Yeah. You're,
that's really for you, Trudy.
It is.
I could see you being the every time, because there's something different. You're already, now it's got me wondering. I'm like, I need to look at what's in these magazines, because I've noticed them. I've never like looked at them. So that was one thing. But the second thing that you brought up was the group think. And I guess it's like, how do we maybe change some habits that we've been brought up in, especially in the next gen community? We've been taught to work together, think together, do things together, go through school. I mean, like everything has been about group. And so, or you're not a group or a team player. Like, so I guess I know these are extremes, but like, how do we begin to change those habits to help ourselves start having a better disruptor type mindset?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, first of all, don't beat up yourself so much, because it's not just the profession where this is an issue. It literally is an issue in our world today, right? Yeah. That we're not willing to listen to people that believe or think differently, or have, basically, as I say it, people who have looked through different lenses of the glasses, who have different lenses that they look through. We're losing, or we're just choosing not to listen to other people's perspectives and be respectful enough to say, I understand where you're coming from, and whether that's my lens or not, I still respect it. We, as a society, have lost so much of that, and that's why we're standing at the precipice of where we are. But that leads so perfectly into one of the passions that I have about the profession, and that's the work that has been done on diversity and inclusion. And I say that in many ways. I say that, one, from being one of the co-founders of the Diversity and Inclusion Initiative in the Financial Planning Association. So my counterparts, my friends, Lee Baker and Ed Jertson and myself, are the ones who spearheaded the first diversity initiative, which is now the Standing Diversity Committee. And out of that, we were born the diversity scholarships and all the awardees that have been awarded over the years. But I also, as much as I'm so happy to see that many of the honorees and awardees of the diversity scholarship are out and really doing great work in regards to diversity and inclusion, there's also so many things that isn't being done in regards to diversity and inclusion. Lots of times we focus on what we see or what we know as certain diversity topics, and there's so many other topics that we lose sight of because we're just focusing on some of the few. And I talk about this a lot because diversity isn't just the typical five subjects that we talk about. It's truly, in my opinion, the lenses that you look through. And there's so many more lenses to look through. There's things like being a global citizen. There's things like being disabled. There's things like, there's so many things that are challenging us in industries that are becoming acceptable, like crypto and cannabis. And there's just so many other diversity subjects than what we focus on today. And I really implore us to think beyond our traditional focus of usually race, culture, gender, sexual orientation. There's so much more color to the rainbow of diversity topics than just those.
That's a huge point because, I mean, I think of myself and being African-American woman myself that, like, I don't always attend things because it's a racial diversity inclusion topic, but some, even for myself, there's topics that I want to become diverse in. And even the topic that you shared at annual conference about adoption, like, was really mind-blowing to me because I don't have any family members that are adopted. So I don't know what that means, but I deal with clients that have adopted kids.
Right.
My boss has adopted kids. Like, you know, whoever that is around you, but you're never even noticed or understood that background until you got some exposure to it or someone shared their story or provided resources like you did to, like, continue the education piece even after the 50-minute talk.
Right, you know?
And to your point about the other topics, I guess we can, especially for our profession, we can get a little bit caught up sometimes with all the initiatives and the work as a group.
Yes.
And to kind of your point, how can maybe people be making some change and impact about just what they do independently? Like, just an individual can make changes in their own way to include this lens so that way they're not relying on, let's say, a huge organization to make a change or a their job to make a change. Like, what could they be doing just individually to make a change?
Well, I think, I don't remember exactly where I heard this, but it again reminded me, it's like every little thing that's done is not in vain. Matter of fact, it's like the little ripples in the water could actually later become the greatest change that happens to that body of water. So don't forget that something as simple as when I first got in the profession, I'm CPA trained and I knew about the National Association of Black Accountants, right? Because I am one. But when I got in the profession of financial planning, the first thing I thought of was, oh, well, maybe we should expose Black accountants to financial planning. That was just one small thing. And so I chose to do that. And so that one small thing that I chose to do, because there was a national conference that was here in Dallas, as, you know, one step at a time, I've chosen to do more and more and more and more with, you know, diversity and inclusion. When, as a initiative, later to become a committee, we said, you know, we should have diversity scholarships. That just seemed like one small thing. But now that we're maybe a decade into awarding these scholarships and we see the immense, if I could say it again, colors of the rainbow that have come out of having people in the profession with different lenses, it's amazing. At that one time, at that one moment of doing that one small thing, it seemed like a good idea, but I would not have grown to believe it would change so much of the color of our profession now. By no means am I saying there's not a lot more work to be done, but little things matter. So instead of thinking, what can I do to completely disrupt, just start. That's what I'd say. Just start.
Oh my gosh, that was the best part right there. It's like, sometimes it can be very overwhelming. And I feel like just, you know, in this profession, things look sometimes so large, the scale is so big, but it's like, if you can make a little change for just something you do personally, the just endless effect, that becoming a habit, other people hearing about it, other people seeing the way you move when you embrace these new ideas that you have. I mean, right. It's just so impactful.
Absolutely.
And so I know this conversation can go on for hours, but there's just one part that I just want to make sure we also touch on, because I know there are listeners who are a part of the Next Gen community. They're in their first decade of their career.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several takeaways. So I hope everybody was writing notes, or you have to go back and re-listen. But what things do you want to leave for the Next Gen community to help with the change and the future of the profession? What things do you want to leave them with?
Well, I have another mantra, by the way.
Yeah. Dropping mantras.
That I actually created a long time ago, and I've chosen to, whenever asked about diversity in the profession, to make sure that I reiterate it. And that is, it is critical that as a profession, we spread the awareness of the profession. And once people have embraced awareness, they know it exists as a profession, then it is critical that you give them exposure in the profession. And once they are aware of the profession and they have been properly exposed to the profession, that the last thing that you provide to them is the opportunity to be in the profession. So my dad, who's an educator, he's actually a psychology professor, saw that my mantra was A for awareness, E for exposure, and O for opportunity. And he said to me, Trudy, do you realize that it's A, E, O, but what's left is the you and I? So it's like you and I need to provide awareness, exposure, and opportunity for diversity and inclusion in the profession. And as simple as it is, you know, A-E-I-O-U, it's a way that could be reminded of you and I are so important that for us to get more, not just diversity in the profession, but better answers. Because the bottom line is, research time and time and time and time again is better answers come from diverse populations. So if we can get more diverse populations aware, exposed, and actually opportunity in the profession, then we're only going to get stronger. So that's a huge mantra that I have for anyone who's in the profession and is saying, how can I make it better? I'd start there.
That was really great, Trudy. Thank you so much. That that mantra I might be actually using after this. That one I'll probably take if it's okay with you.
It's the reason why I take the time to explain it, because it makes total sense, and it's actually in order. Now this might be a little extra on the mantra, but the A, E, and the O are in the proper order. First, there's awareness. Then there's exposure. And thirdly, there's the opportunity. And that's how we make this profession even better. So I invite you. I'd be honored for you to use the mantra.
Well, thank you again, Trudy, for sharing with us today on the podcast. I know I've learned a lot, and I know the listeners will probably have questions. And so get your email ready. But thank you again so much for coming on today.
No, my pleasure. And I look forward to it. Definitely hope that I do get questions and am able to help some more people. I do have a passion that I say for anyone who is interested in being successful in this profession. There are absolutely not enough of us. And so, yes, I am willing always for those that are willing to do the hard work and truly mean it. We need more ethical, confident financial planners of diverse populations, all populations in this world. So be glad to speak with people on that.
How is your work connecting you to your purpose, your community, and your values? I'm Kate Healy, Managing Director of Generation Next at TD Ameritrade. And we believe that independent registered investment advisors have the power to impact the world in profound ways. If you've never considered being an RIA, it's time to take a look. There's no better way to put your skills and knowledge to work for the greater good of your clients, your community, and your own future. Find out more at tdainstitutional.com.
Love what you hear on this podcast? Join us in the FPA Activate Facebook community, where you'll find a community of other passionate planners like you. Not only that, but there are live How We Do What We Do sessions focused on what real financial planning looks like in practice. Be sure to join us there to lend your voice, become a better planner, and help grow the financial planning profession.